Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, when you're watching a huge blockbuster or maybe a documentary shot somewhere really extreme or even just like a fast-paced reality show, you're totally focused on the screen, right? The story, the effects, the drama. You're definitely not thinking about the massive kind of industrial operation it took to get that shot. But behind, well, pretty much every frame, there's this complex and honestly, often dangerous production environment. So today we're doing a deep dive into those hidden risks, the ones lurking in the media industry. Our sources really lay out the specifics, the legal stuff, the physical hazards, even digital dangers that media companies have to deal with, and crucially, the systems they absolutely must have in place to manage it all.
Yeah, and our mission today essentially is to pull out those key risks and really understand the detailed procedures. We're talking everything from, you know, the location scout checking things out on the ground right up to the ergonomics of the chair you might be sitting in right now. These procedures legally bind companies to keep everyone safe. And the whole thing, really, it's built on this one foundational piece of UK law, the Health and Safety at Work Act from 1974. And let's be clear, this act isn't just guidance, it's a strict legal mandate. It says businesses are fundamentally responsible for protecting everyone involved. That means the crew, the actors, any clients, visitors, and importantly, the general public who might just happen to be nearby a shoot.
Okay, that sounds fair enough, but there's that key phrase in the act, isn't there? The bit that gives it teeth. They have to protect people as far as it is reasonably practicable. What does that actually mean when you're talking about, say, a big high-stakes film production?
Well, that phrase is, you could say, the entire ballgame. It's what separates just sort of box-ticking from a genuine safety culture. Reasonably practicable means a company has to weigh up the actual risk against the time, the trouble, the cost, and the physical effort needed to control it. Think of it like this. If stopping a serious injury means spending, say, £10,000, and the production company can afford that without, you know, crippling the budget, they absolutely have to spend it. But if preventing some incredibly tiny, almost impossible risk would cost millions and maybe bankrupt the whole project for a very marginal safety gain, well, then it might fall outside what's considered reasonably practical. Mm. It really forces companies to think ahead, to budget for safety, and to always, always put people's well-being ahead of just saving money unless the cost is, like, totally disproportionate to the risk involved.
Okay, got it. So let's maybe unpack this. Starting with the risks, you can really picture the stuff happening on set or out on location, far from any spreadsheets. When people imagine film set dangers, they probably think of, I don't know, a big explosion scene going wrong. Mm-hmm. But the source material paints a much broader picture, right? A really diverse list of hazards, often much more mundane, but still dangerous.
Yeah,
you're looking at significant risks just from working at heights. And that's not just for the construction crew building the set.
Mm-hmm.
It affects actors on wires or complex rigs, camera operators way up on platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And then down on the ground, you've got those classic, always present trip hazards. You know, power cables snaking everywhere, dolly tracks for smooth camera moves. They're necessary, but they're definitely hazards.
Absolutely. And you can't forget the danger of mixing high-voltage electricity for all those powerful lights and equipment with metal structures like scaffolding and sometimes even water effects for rain or splashes. Electrocution, it's a constant, genuinely terrifying risk that needs nonstop vigilance. And it goes beyond just the physical environment, too. The actual work of filmmaking is often inherently hazardous. Mm. We're talking about lifting really heavy equipment cameras, lights, sound gear that can weigh hundreds of pounds. Then you add in the calculated risks, like using firearms, even if they're firing blanks, and performing complex stunts, maybe with vehicles or falls. Even with experts planning every detail, the potential for something going wrong is high.
And here's something maybe less obvious but critical according to the sources. The schedule itself can be a hazard.
Mm-hmm.
Exhaustion.
Oh, definitely.
Long hours. The pressure to keep moving. It compromises judgment, doesn't it? One slick up from a tired crew member, someone working with lights or grips, could lead directly to a serious accident, no matter how good the paperwork was.
That's a huge factor.
And then think about when the production leaves the controlled environment of a studio and goes out into the real world, a busy street, a remote mountain, a forest. Suddenly the risks just, well, multiply.
Oh.
You're dealing with traffic, unpredictable weather, maybe extreme heat or freezing cold, and you've also got the general public potentially wandering into the middle of things.
And what's really interesting here, the primary way productions tackle all these location-specific risks isn't necessarily fancy tech or huge insurance policies, though those exist. It's meticulous, often low-tech planning, documented in what's called the RES. the location visit.
Reese, right?
Yeah, the Reese is this really comprehensive investigation. It's way more than just checking if a place looks good on camera. The location manager, or whoever's doing it, is checking absolutely everything. Things like technical requirements. Is there enough power? Do we need to bring in massive, noisy generators? And then the practical stuff, parking for all the trucks and vans, easy access for crew and equipment, where the nearest toilets are. The basics, but essential.
And this seems like where the creative vision can really clash with the safety rules. The Reese looks at lighting, sure, like where shadows fall at different times of day, how many hours of useful daylight you'll actually get.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have to identify things that could ruin the shoot. Like background noise. Is it under a flight path? Is there constant traffic noise?
Exactly. And our sources had a great example of this tension. Imagine finding the perfect old house for a period drama set in the 19th century. Looks amazing.
Okay.
But during the retreat, you look up and realize there's a huge modern glass skyscraper looming right behind it in shot.
Ah, right. Kills the illusion.
Totally. Not only does it ruin the period feel, meaning expensive digital removal later, but it might severely limit where you can actually point the camera. And on top of that, the location manager has to note down any specific health and safety problems they spot right there on site, maybe unstable ground or dangerous access points, which further restricts how you can use the space. Suddenly, that perfect location might become practically unusable, you know, as far as is reasonably practicable for that project.
So that detailed resection feeds straight back into that legal requirement from the 74 Act, the need to document and plan everything. Spotting the danger is just step one.
Precisely. Formally planning how to get rid of that danger, or at least reduce it significantly, that's step two, and it's absolutely non-negotiable.
Which brings us neatly to the paperwork side of things, the mandatory document.
Yeah.
The risk assessment. This sounds like the real cornerstone of managing safety systematically.
It absolutely is.
It's not just listing dangers, is it? The key thing is it has to spell out how those risks will be controlled, the actual measures you'll take.
Yes, exactly. The control measures are critical.
Let's use that example from the sources, the crane shot. A production wants to use a big crane to swoop a camera through the air for a really dynamic shot. The risks are pretty obvious, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Clear as day. The camera itself could fall, which could be catastrophic. Or the crane arm, the heavy machinery, could hit someone as it moves.
So the risk assessment for that specific activity would need to detail the controls. What would those look like?
Well, it could be a number of things. Maybe setting up physical barriers, like fencing off a large area around where the crane will operate an exclusion zone. It would likely specify using reinforced safety cables on the camera rig. It would definitely state that only certified trained operators are allowed anywhere near the crane controls, things like that. It turns a potentially scary operation into a managed, controlled process.
And this isn't just a casual process, is it? The sources mentioned specific steps.
That's right. There are actually five mandatory steps to follow when doing a proper risk assessment. And crucially, it all has to be formally recorded. Now, a smaller company might just use a standard template form, but for the big media organizations dealing with maybe multiple films or TV shows at once, they often have quite sophisticated online systems just for tracking, updating, and managing literally thousands of these risk assessments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but given how fast productions move and the constant pressure to meet deadlines and budgets, is there a risk that these super detailed five-step assessments just become, well, bureaucracy? You know, a document that gets filed away somewhere but isn't actually used day-to-day on set.
That's a really fair question, and it hits on the core challenge of making compliance meaningful, not just paperwork. Ideally, if a risk assessment is done properly, it should be a living document, something the crew refers back to. But yes, the risk of it just becoming a tick box exercise is definitely there, especially if management only sees it as a way to cover themselves legally. However, the legal stack the threat of prosecution under the 74 Act if something does go wrong and they didn't follow their own assessment. That's the mechanism that's supposed to keep it relevant. It forces producers and managers to actually check that the safety controls are in place. Because if there's an incident, you can bet the first thing any investigators will demand to see is that risk assessment and evidence it was followed.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so we spent a good chunk of time on the sort of high adrenaline physical risks out on set or location.
Mm-hmm.
But the 74 Act covers all work activities. We need to shift gears completely now and look at the digital workspace. Because let's face it, a huge number of people in media editors, writers, producers, animators spend their entire day at a computer. And that environment, while it looks safe, brings its own set of serious, often chronic health problems.
Absolutely right. The modern office might seem tame compared to a film set, But prolonged computer use definitely introduces specific chronic health risks that can build up over years. The most common things we see, and that the sources clearly point out, are musculoskeletal problems, things like persistent back and neck pain, tension headaches, and of course, the big one, repetitive strain injury, or RSI.
RSI, yeah. Nasty stuff.
Very.
And this was where the law gets really specific again, isn't it? We move from the General 74 Act to regulations aimed squarely at computer users. The Health and Safety Regulations for Display Screen Equipment, or DSE, which came in back in 1992.
That's the one.
And the level of detail in these regulations just shows how seriously workplace health, even in an office, is taken legally.
It does. The DSE regulations put very clear duties on the employer. They must carry out a specific risk assessment for every single workstation that employees use regularly. The whole point is to identify and reduce those DSE-related risks.
So assessing the desk, the chair, the screen position.
All of that, yes, and more. They're legally required to make sure employees can take regular breaks away from looking at their screens. That's not just a friendly suggestion, it's a mandated control measure under the regulations.
Wow, okay. Mandated breaks.
Yeah. And the employer also has to provide proper health and safety training specifically about using workstations correctly. Things like how to adjust your chair, maintain good posture, arrange your desk to avoid strain, and perhaps the bit that surprises most employees. The company has to pay for eye tests yearly if an employee who uses a screen asks for one. It's an acknowledgement of the visual strain involved.
Paying for eye tests, that's quite something. So that DSE risk assessment itself must be pretty detailed then. It's not just about buying a decent chair, is it?
No, not at all. It's about the whole setup. The assessment has to look at the environment too. For example, making sure the lighting in the room or light coming in from windows doesn't cause glare or annoying reflections on the monitor screen. They also need to check the tech itself, making sure the screen doesn't flicker, that the text size and contrast are suitable for the user so they're not squinting. And, maybe surprisingly, they even need to check that screens are kept reasonably clean and dust-free, because a dirty screen can reduce clarity and make your eyes work harder, leading to strain.
Checking for dust. Okay, they really do cover everything.
Pretty much. And it's not a one-off check either. The regulations say these DSE assessments need to be reviewed regularly. Definitely when new staff start, or if new equipment like a different monitor or desk is brought in, it requires ongoing attention to stay compliant.
Right. So that comprehensive approach. I mean, checking screen dust in an edit suite, all the way to checking screen stability on a mountainside, that's what ties it all together.
Exactly. It shows that safety has to be managed across the entire production process, regardless of the specific job. It's achieved through that structured system we've talked about, identifying risks, planning controls, and providing practical training.
So just to recap the main areas we've covered, we looked at the unique physical risks on set and location, then the chronic but equally important DSE risks in the office environment. Underpinning all that are the two key pieces of legislation, the overarching 1974 Health and Safety at Work Act and the more specific 1992 DSE regulations for computer work. And the main tools for actually doing the safety work proactively are the location roof and the formal documented risk assessment.
That's a good summary. And what it all really establishes is that safety isn't, or certainly shouldn't be, an add-on or an afterthought in media production. It has to be woven into the logistical fabric, into the creative planning, right from the very first idea or location scout. It's that systematic approach driven by law that ultimately protects everyone involved, from the top executives right down to the person making the tea.
Okay, but let's leave our listeners with a final thought, something to chew on, which brings us right back to that core legal tension we mentioned earlier. Imagine that location manager finds a place.
Yeah.
It's creatively perfect. The light is incredible. The landscape is unique. It's exactly what the director dreamed of.
Right, the magic spot.
Exactly. But implementing the safety controls needed to shoot there, maybe because it's unstable or access is dangerous, would require incredibly expensive engineering work. Or maybe it would restrict filming so much that you lose all the best camera angles. How does that legal duty to protect people as far as is reasonably practicable actually change the creative decision? Does safety, at the end of the day, get the final veto over the artistic vision?
Well, that's the tightrope walk that happens every single day in this industry, isn't it? The cost of making something safe, combined with the very real legal weight of that 74 Act, often means that, yes, safety has to be the final arbiter. It's worth thinking about how specific roles, like a stunt coordinator deciding if a risky sequence can be done safely, or that location manager balancing the director's dream with the physical reality, spend their entire careers navigating that precise, critical balance. They're trying to deliver spectacular results, absolutely, but without breaking the law, or worse, endangering the lives of the people making the magic happen.